it's John and Casey here from Are You Real? And we've been sleeping on MyPillow now for over a month. And I'm telling you, our sleep has improved drastically. So what are you waiting for? When are you going to jump on board and start experiencing the kind of restorative sleep you need in your life? Are you waiting for a better offer? Well, your wait is over, because if you go to MyPillow.com right now, you can take advantage of the MyPillow 4-pack offer. Right, John?
That's right. You get two premium MyPillows and two to-go anywhere pillows at half off. Just go to MyPillow.com, use my code REAL, and get 50% off. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, and enter promo code REAL. Or call 1-800-943-4615. But don't forget, you got to use promo code REAL.
Welcome to Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You, the podcast that focuses on Christians that are active in everyday life. Join in as we speak to everyone from successful business owners to educators to athletes about their faith and how it helps them reach out and revolutionize those around them to do the same. And now get ready to roar with your host, the voice of manifestation, John Fuller.
Hey, Roar Nation, John Fuller here, and we are fired up today to jump into our very special guest, Hannah Brencher. Hannah, you ready to rock this thing?
I am so ready.
Come on now. Okay, so Roar Nation, check this out. Hannah is a writer. She's a TED speaker, a webcast teacher with a heart for building leaders. Her first book, If You Find This Letter, tells the story behind the social movement More Love Letters, which includes 100,000 individuals in 70 countries. Hannah was named as one of the White House's, quote, women working to do good, and featured on CNN, World News, The Wall Street Journal, Oprah.com, and Glamour. Hannah lives in Atlanta, Georgia, with her husband, Lane. All right, Hannah, that is actually quite an intro, just to be honest. When you go from TED speaker to book to CNN, Oprah. Man, let's dive into some of this awesomeness and who you are and what do you do?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so let's just give me a little bit of background of like who you are, what you do, your marriage, things like that. Just kind of surface stuff so we can get a feel for you.
Yeah, so I would say first and foremost, you know, I'm a writer. Writing is my biggest passion, what I've always been about. So I wrote my first book, just came out with my second book. And I also teach online writing classes. So for people that want to know the discipline of writing, it is an online course that I offer several times a year for people to just dig in and learn more and like finally set their butt in the chair and start writing. And so writing's my biggest passion. I also run More Love Letters. Crazy accident, never expected to start a global movement, but it's been a lot of fun. And I live in Atlanta. I relocated to Atlanta about 4 years ago, got married a year and a half ago to a really sweet Southern man.
We love them sweet Southern men, don't we?
Yeah, his name is Lane. He's very Southern.
Lane.
But he's awesome. And we just, we're enjoying being newly married, spending time with friends, traveling around the country, all the good stuff. So, life's really fun.
So we got something in common. I married a Southern girl.
So okay. Yes.
I married me a Texas girl, and then I got adopted into the country of Texas.
I love that. There's nothing like Southern hospitality.
You know what's funny? There's really true. Like, I didn't understand that until we moved. I grew up in Arizona, and we lived in New Mexico for 10 years. And then when we came to Texas, my wife would come over here to visit her family. And I'll never forget the first time. We're inside of this local grocery store, and they kept on asking me, can we carry your groceries for you? Can we help you with your shopping cart? Can we help you load your groceries? And like, you walk in and, hi, how are you doing today? And it was so foreign to me. And I remember looking over at my, at the time we were engaged, and I remember looking over at Casey and being like, is this normal? Like, these people are weird. Like, I've never been asked so many times, can somebody carry my groceries or load my groceries? Or everybody said hi and waved. And I thought, this is so weird. And now It's weird when we go other places, I say hi to everybody and I wave, and sometimes people look at me and give me looks like, are you okay?
Totally. I know, coming from the north, like New England area, it's like completely like a culture shock of how sweet people are and kind and genuine and want to talk to you when you're in Target. And so I still feel like I just have that New Englander mentality a little bit, though, you know, of like, no, you just kind of go and you run your errands and like you do your thing and you keep your head down. And so it's been good for me, I think, to be here in the South. I really enjoy it. I love the people. I love the food.
That's interesting. Okay. So I want to ask you this. Let's dive in. Before we kind of dive in on your journey, which I'm really interested in, the love letters and writing and all that, because we're all about purpose. Has there been kind of a inspirational quote or scripture that's guided you along the way?
Yeah, you know, I am a big, I'm a big reader of Maya Angelou. I really love Maya Angelou. And, I read a lot of her books, like growing up, and she's always just kind of been like that sort of inspiration. To be honest, I wasn't a Christian until I was 22 years old. And so I think that like when I dove in at 22, like head first, so it's not even like, I wouldn't say it's an inspirational verse so much as, it's just a verse that really like has always spoken to me, is the verse Job 23:10. It says, "For he knows the way I take, and when he has tested me, I will come forth as gold." So again, like really not that inspirational in the sense of like, yeah, testing, really fun, awesome, you know? But I just have always like clung to that verse since the beginning of my faith journey, because I just love that picture. I love that picture of knowing that like we're going to walk through some hard times and we're going to walk through some tests. And that's like a huge part of everyday life. But like the result of that, when we come through those trials and those struggles, is that like, you know, we come out of it as gold. And I just love that picture. I always have.
I love that you talk about that. The Lord's really put that on my heart lately. I think so many times, I'm actually working on a sermon right now, talking about the characteristics as a Christian. Mm-hmm. And I love that you bring that up, because I think so many times when we go through hard things, we ask the wrong question, and it's why God, or like, why am I going through this? And what's happening, when really we should go even deeper than that and say, God, what are you wanting to teach me through this?
So, so true. I mean, it's just, it's like one of those things where it's like, I think I say like in my most recent book about how instead of like always praying like the take it away prayer, like, God, take it away, take it away, take it away. It's like, God, like, help me move through this, because anything that I've gone through that's been tough, that I've struggled with, like ultimately those are the things that have like brought out more character in me and have taught me and have given me the sweetest lessons. At the time, it wasn't fun, you know, like looking back, like it's not like, oh yeah, that was like definitely my favorite part of life. But the result of it is that we grow and we change and we become more like Jesus.
Yeah. And that's the hard part. I mean, I can think about, I'm quite a bit or older than you now, but I just remember looking back in my 20s and thinking like going through some of the hardest things in my life, had, you know, God gave me this ministry now, what we do with Are You Real and those things. I just think about, because we're, you know, we're international and we're big in the U.S., just how maybe arrogant and prideful I would have been or could have been at a young age. And I think when you really go through some trials and you go through some stuff, your perspective on life and your appreciation for what God's doing, there's just so much more value. Like you talk about, it's a refiner's fire.
And totally. Yep. 100%.
So I would love to jump into your journey. You talked about getting into writing. Your passion, obviously, is writing. How did you get into that? And even going into your first book, you talk about TED talking. I'd love for you to go back several years and just the process that you got into and how you discovered being able to get a book published and writing and all the things that you're doing now.
Yeah. So, I mean, ever since I was a little girl, I always, like, since I was 6 years old, I thought that I would be a writer. My grandmother told me that I was going to be a writer. And at that age, you're like, you don't doubt it. Like, you don't realize that, like, a lot of people would consider writing to be like a pipe dream, you know, as you get older. And so I just always sat down and I would write. And I think it was when I was 9 years old that I wrote my first novel, if you would call it that. And I just remember this is what I would do. I would spend the whole entire year writing a novel. And then in the month of like November, my mom would help me print it and bind it and put it together. And I would give it to all my friends and family for like their Christmas gifts. And I did this up until I think I was like 15 years old. So I think there was like 6 or 7 books that I wrote during that time. And that was probably the age where I was like, okay, this isn't cool anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore. I almost wish that I'd kept doing it, but.
But that is really cool that even that your mom recognized that and she helped you with that gift. Like, that is awesome.
She helped me do it. And my sweet family, like my extended family, you know, they've like looked so forward to like getting my book and like reading it. And they were like, it's crazy because it's like, they were like these really cryptic, like, crime murder novels that I was writing at the age of 10. And so
did you ever get a question like, should we be concerned type thing?
All the time. my like aunts and uncles would be like, she's either brilliant or like, this is just strange, you know,
she's going to be on the next 2020 murder miss Dateline NBC.
Right. I really feel like there's like some, I've got some like dark crime novels in me. I mean, like one of the books was called Mommy, There's Someone in My Room. Like what? I don't know what was going on in my brain at that time, but I'm thankful that my mom just like, she fueled that in me. Like she never told me I was wrong to feel that way or to write these things. Like she just allowed me to be a creative being. And so, yeah, when I moved off to New York City after college, I had gotten an English major, but honestly it was like more on the side of mass communications. So I really put that dream on the shelf, I think. Like at that point I thought like, I don't know that I can actually be a writer. I don't know if this is practical. And so when
hold,
I started-
Hold on reading, real quick, Hannah. I want to dive into that because I think so many people have that issue. Why, I mean, you've written a ton now. You've gotten a degree in it or somewhat pursued it. You've written at this point 6 or 7 books, and obviously they were for fun, but you still wrote them, which is huge.
Yeah.
Why did you doubt yourself?
I think we reach a certain age where all of a sudden we realize like, wait, okay, people don't think that that's a practical career route, you know? And I think it's the culture that we live in that when you say you want to write books, people's natural response is like, oh, so like you want to live in your parents' basement and like write the next Harry Potter, you know?
That's awesome.
And so I don't know, like, because I got up until the age of, I want to say, 18 or 19, being like, this is what I'm going to do. This is who I'm going to be. And then it was in college that I think I thought, oh, that's not like, that doesn't get the response that I want to get from people when they ask me what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. Now, my thing is, I don't even understand why we ask college students that, like, because anyone that like comes out of college or like chooses not to go to college and moves into a career path, a lot of times we're like, what I thought I was going to be doing 5 years ago, like I'm not doing right now, you know? And so I don't know why we ask like young people, like, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? But like when people would ask me that question, I think I keyed into the fact of like, oh, like being a writer doesn't make anybody feel like I'm going to be safe or that I'm going to be anything more than a starving artist. And I just did not want to be classified as a starving artist. I had no desire to be in that route. And so I just kind of think I let that like push me into an area of like, you know what, I'm going to do whatever I can to have a successful career and I'm going to put this on the back burner. But the thing is, it came back around after I started writing the letters and like mailing them to people. And then that led into me giving an audition for TED. And what TED did was they took the audition and they put it up online. And it was like my life just flipped upside down.
Hold on. You're getting ahead. I'm excited about this. So go to the letters. Like, what inspired writing love letters? Because TED's a big deal. obviously. Yes. And that was a huge shift for you. So let's come back to the letters. What inspired that? What started that? Because I love the fact it's a global movement. What inspired that?
So that really was like inspired in a lot of parts because of my mom. So like throughout my life, my mom would always write letters for me and she would leave them for me to find. Like, and she continued that throughout college. She would always mail me letters. And so when I got to New York City and for the first time struggled with a sadness that eventually became a diagnosis for depression, I really didn't know like how to cope with that. I didn't know how to tell people I was feeling that. Like, I wrote a blog at the time, but like, I also knew like, okay, like my blog is not where I'm going to tell people like I'm feeling morbidly sad about pursuing my dreams, you know? And so I started to write letters, and I would write letters to people that I would see around New York City. And then I would fold them up and I would leave them behind. And so it was almost like I was getting to write like these pages of my diary and then just let them go. And I would leave them wherever I would go. And what I found is that like, it would be a driver and a motivation for me, like to get up and to get going, because I knew that I could like leave these letters in different places and leave them in coffee shops and in my favorite bookstores and in my favorite books.
I'm just curious, so like, what would they say?
So they would be a combination of like inspiration, knowing like, okay, like if I'm feeling this, I can't be the only one. Like when you get onto the subway in New York City, you're just like, man, no one really looks happy. No one looks full of joy. Everybody's kind of to themselves, and it can feel really lonely. And that loneliness just kind of overtook me. And so I would try to encourage people and write the words that I really needed to hear. But I also like would just be really honest about the place that I was in, because I felt the freedom in being able to say it and then let it go and it would be gone, you know? And so it was a mix of both of those things in those letters that I would leave behind.
So was there any way for people to contact you or anything, or it was just like you just ended the note? I'm just curious, did you ever get feedback from any of them, anything?
So those first letters that I left around New York City, I did not put any contact details. It didn't even occur to me until I think one of my friends or somebody said to me like, oh, you should put a way for people to find you. And so then I started to like write my blog on like the letters. But I honestly, like, I always felt weird about that. I liked that it was anonymous. I liked that you didn't know who it was. I didn't want people to contact me because, like, what would they say? Like, I don't know, I found your letter. I feel the same way as you. Like, it wasn't until I blogged about leaving letters around New York City and put the question out there to people, like, if you need a love letter, I will write it to you, that my inbox filled up with hundreds of people asking me to write them letters. Some of the craziest stories that I had ever read, like, I'm not kidding you. Like, it was like, I thought I would write maybe 3 or 4 letters, like, to whoever read my blog at the time. But it was, I wrote 400 letters in the next 9 months.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so that really begs a deeper question here is, what are people longing for? So, I mean, for people to reach out to you, obviously, or I'm assuming they're sharing their story behind like why they need it. I mean, is there one that stands out to you that you remember that just really touched your heartstrings?
I mean, there were so many at that time. What I do remember most about that time, though, was like, first off, I just was floored by the amount of like young women that were reaching out that like seemingly had it all, you know, like going to Ivy League schools, like killing it and still feeling like this crippling loneliness and this pressure and this feeling of like, I'm not enough. And so for me, it felt like the veil kind of got dropped and I could no longer feel or think that I was the only one. I wasn't the only one. I knew I wasn't the only one. And then what always stuck out to me in those like original 400 letters is when somebody would reach out and ask me to write a letter for somebody else in their life. And so this person would have no idea that they were going to get a letter and they had no idea who requested the letter on their behalf. But I always found those to be really cool to send a letter when somebody wasn't expecting it.
That's powerful. I'll tell you this. One of my giftings is prophetic and just hearing God's voice for people's lives. And it's been amazing to do that because what I've always sensed, and when the Lord gives me a word for somebody, is always his heart for mm-hmm. them. And what I see that is, what I love about what you're doing is you're speaking, it's almost like you're tapped into the Father and just being able to pour out his love on people without having a religious label on it. It's not like you're saying, hey, I'm a Christian or whatever, or God, thus saith the Lord, just something stupid. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's authentic, yeah, and it's totally his love without having to be, without having to speak Christianese, if that makes sense.
Well, and that's what's so interesting about it is that I wasn't a Christian at the time, you know? So it's like,
that's even better.
I have the spiritual gift of prophecy as well. Now that I've learned it and I've understood it and I've exercised it a little bit, I always kind of wondered, like when I was like younger, like, what is this thing, you know? Like, but
yeah, it almost feels weird, but nobody, cause it is rare.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It is weird. And I always make the joke cause I have a lot. I mean, when I say a lot, I have hundreds of friends that are prophetic, just because that's a group that I travel in. And I always make the joke, like they are some of the weirdest people I've ever been around. And I'm like, you don't have to make prophetic weird. It's just, what is God saying? And just deliver it. Like you're having a conversation with somebody. We don't have to make this weird.
Oh man, I wish I had like a traveling group of 100 or so prophetic people. That would be awesome. I'd be like,
I'll get you plugged in with a cool group of people, but I'm just telling you, like, it does not have to. And I'm telling people out there to understand this, like that are either scared of it or don't understand it. I'm like, it is literally is just as simple as spending time in your journal or something and just saying, hey God, what are you saying about me today or this situation? And literally just going into what him and writing it down or whatever. Like, it's,
yes,
it's,
I,
yeah,
I feel like it's like, I'm newly kind of like, I guess like exercising the gift more, you know, like I told my friends, like, I think it was last Easter or whatever. Like, I think I have this gift of prophecy, but like, what do you do when you think you have a spiritual gift, you know? And they were like, you just have to find like safe places where you can kind of just like test it out, you know? But I like told my mom, like, I'm like, it's like, to me, it feels like a water faucet of like, if I sit and I just allow the spirit to move and like, I'll just start writing things down and it will be a word for that person and that person, and that person. It's a little bit like, you're almost like, okay, I have to know that when I sit down and I allow this to happen, it's going to happen and I don't need to be freaked out by it, you know, because some of the words are just so specific that you're like, this is wild. Like, there's no denying this.
So just to help you out, and I'm going to throw a plug in here for some of my friends because I love them. It's Sean Bowles' ministry.
Okay.
He's got a book called God Secrets. I went and hosted their God Secrets event about a month ago with my wife over in Dallas. There was 1,500 people there. It was insane. Wow. But he goes into speaking words of knowledge, words of wisdom. If you get a chance, it's Sean and it's B-O-L-Z. But he is there's a lot of people out there, but he's one of the most practical type people out there that just to me that brings normalcy to hearing God's voice.
Love that. I'm totally going to look that up.
Okay, so let's go into, so you write a bunch of letters, you're getting feedback, and somehow let's go into TED Talk, because that's a huge deal to get. I inspire someday to get to speak at a TED Talk. So I really do. I just think it's cool just to say you got to do it. So how did that happen?
So I just like literally it was like pure accident. That's how I know that it was only God, you know, because I had like kind of lived out this story. I was running more love letters. Like I turned it into like a company so that other people could do it with me. And my friend was just like, you know, like you need to do a TEDx. And I honestly, like I'd watched one TED talk before. Like I didn't know much about TED. And so I went on to TEDx to see if there were any TEDxs in the area, and there weren't. And so I noticed that TED Global was doing a talent search. Like it was the first talent search that they had ever done. They were going across, I believe it was 14 countries looking for undiscovered stories. And so that's all you had to do. You had to record a video and send it in. And that was like kind of your like application. So I got on my iPhone and I like recorded this video and I sent it in. And like 2 months later, I was reached out to by TED saying, like, you're an US finalist, like, come to TED on this day and you're going to audition. And so I knew nothing. Like, I really had no idea what was actually going on beyond, like, this is what they've told me to do. And so this is what I'm going to do. So I had to, like, I had to write a talk. They kind of went through the talk to, like, clear it, to make sure it was, like, the right time. I showed up to the TED offices. I practiced my talk in front of, like, the whole entire TED staff. And then the next day, I was so nervous. Oh my gosh. I think I was fumbling all over my words. Nope. Like, all that I had was a crazy stage anxiety. Like, I had made a promise to myself that I was never getting on stage again after being a competitive dancer and, like, being crushed by anxiety. And so this was my first time doing anything, speaking anywhere.
Okay, but how'd you get over that? Because that's a big, I mean, it's taken me a lot of years to get comfortable on stage. So I'm just curious, because that's a monumental thing. What'd you tell yourself?
I mean, legitimately, it was the grace of God. I don't know. Okay. I don't have any other explanation for it, because no, I should have bombed that talk. And I think people on the TED team were like, oh gosh, we don't know what's going to happen when we put her up there. They didn't know, because during the actual practice, I was stumbling. I was like, oh, this, that, going back on my words. And the guy, like basically they told me to rewrite half of the talk the night before the audition.
Oh crap.
So I went back, like, rewrote half the talk. Then that was it. Like, you show up to the audition and whatever it's going to be, it's going to be.
Okay.
And
so wait, hold on real quick. Are you a Christian yet at this time?
At this time, I am. I'm a baby Christian. Yes.
Okay, so God's totally, like, you feel his sense with you. And I was actually hoping you were going to say you weren't. And the only reason I say that is because I think so many times people think God's not with us when we're not saved yet. And that is so far from the truth, because I can look back at my life for years before where, like, I could feel his presence. I sensed him, but I never acknowledged him.
Yep.
And I think totally. So many people don't recognize that. Like, even when we're in our deepest and darkest of sin and we think we're the biggest screw up, God's like, Jesus is right there next to us, just like trying to nudge us along to help us. So, side note, sorry, hijacked it.
I totally 100% agree. Like, and so at this point, yeah, I had been maybe like, I'd been a Christian for, I think, like a year at that point. And so very new to everything and just really not even like, just trying to figure it out, you know? But so when I got up there on stage for the actual audition, which you're auditioning in front of, I think it was 250, maybe 300 past TED speakers that all got to rate you in the audience. Like, they rated you. So I'm looking out and like seeing people that I've watched their TED talks and been like, oh my gosh, that person, I aspire to be like that person, or like that person's a huge deal, all sitting there like watching me talk. And I can't even explain it to you. Like just the peace of God came over me in that moment. And like, I got off the stage and people from the TED staff were like crying, being like, oh my gosh, you did it. Like, it was maybe one of the best nights of my life. And I don't even say that because I got to give this TED talk. Like, it was because I felt like for the first time, like standing in a room of people, I did not feel like the oddball anymore. I didn't feel like I was weird. I had people that were walking up to me afterwards being like, this is an amazing idea. And like, where I had come from, it was like, yeah, an amazing idea. But like, you were kind of the unicorn in the room. Like, you were the different one. Like, you were the one kind of going off on your own path. And so I just felt completely known. I felt like I belonged in that space. So they basically said that they were going to put the videos up online and then people were going to vote. And then they would pick one person from every TED in the 14 countries to go to TED Global. So the chances of me actually getting picked out of, I think, like 40 American talks was slim to none. But they sent the email that basically said, you know, like, we're sorry, like, you haven't been picked for TED Global. We're so thankful for you. So I thought the dream was done at that point. I'm like, okay, at least I went and I did it. I auditioned. I have this great video. But this random day, I believe in like November of that year, I'm like at my computer, like doing my work. And my friends just start texting me and they're like, Hannah, like, you're on TED.com. Like, you are TED Talk of the day. And I thought like it was some mistake. I like called the TED content coordinator who'd become my friend at this point being like, is this like, it's not April Fool's. Like, what is this? Like, why is the talk up there? And he's like, oh, like, did no one call you and tell you? And I'm like, no, didn't get like any kind of heads up. But apparently somebody was supposed to contact me like 2 weeks earlier and let me know my talk was going to go up. But they told me that like their my talk was like one in a handful of talks that was their favorite, and they didn't want to change it or edit it. They didn't want me to redo it. They wanted to just put it up on the website as is. And things just blew up after that. It was literally like a like my life changed drastically in 24 hours.
Okay, so I'm I love this because I just think about all the talks that I've done over the last 2 years and interviewing people. And I'm just telling you, I'm almost in tears right now. And I'm being honest, is every time that I have talked to somebody and they have stepped into them, like their gift, what God has done for them in a moment, all of it has just been overcoming fear, being obedient.
Yeah.
And just overcoming, like God had something for them, but they literally had to step into it. It's like, it's there, kind of like the walls of Jericho. And it sounded stupid to them. And it's like, well, go walk around the wall seven times. Well, that sounds retarded. Let's just be honest, right? Or let's go throw a rock at a giant. But they did it. And it's like when you step out on that stage of life and just say, I'm going to overcome this. I'm going to do it. I have a gift. Maybe I don't have a gift for it. I don't know, but I'm just going to do it and see what happens. And like, that was life changing for you.
Yeah. And it came with that willingness to step out, because like when people say like, oh, I want to be a speaker, I want to do this, I'm like, that wasn't part of my plan. That was not something I wanted. I wanted to write. That's all I've ever wanted to do. And so like putting me up on a stage in front of people, like really wasn't something that I was interested in. And you asked about like, you know, like how do you get over that in the face of giving talks and being really nervous? Like, honestly, like that might've been the first talk, but like for the next, I would say a year and a half, 2 years, like I was like on the verge of panic attacks every time I had to give a talk. But like I said yes every single time, because I'm like, what else is there to do? You know, like I just have to say yes. And I remember praying at some point, I think like 2 years into it, God, like if this is going to like keep happening, like if you have this for me, like I'm just praying that at some point, like that I can enjoy this, like that the best moment for me won't be when the talk is over and I can go home, you know? And he's totally, totally done that and like caused me to like be able to get up on stage and enjoy it. But like the nerves, like that fear, it does not go away until I hit the stage. Like it is always with me. I carry it with me and it starts early. So it's like, if I have to give a talk on like a Thursday, I will carry the burden up until Thursday. Like, and it's just one of those things where it hasn't changed yet. Like, and so this is the stage that I'm in of like knowing that like I carry this thing up until I'm able to release it.
Okay, so next 24 hours, it gets released. Like, what happens after that? I'm dying to know, because this is like a novel. Like, you just hit the climax. I'm, like, curious. I'm like, what happened?
Like, oh, okay. So, with the TED Talk.
Yeah, with the TED Talk. So, you said it was life. Yeah. You said, like, this at this point, it's life-changing. So, everything at this point changes.
Well, just even, like, the fact that what's so crazy is, like, TED has been such a pivotal part of like my business journey. I love TED and I love them specifically because they are who they say they are. Like they are this iconic brand, but like they literally just treat people well, you know, like they have, I can only attribute it to God and TED that like I am in the space that I am in. But like, so the weekend that I gave that TED audition, I also knew that I was going to walk in on Monday and quit my full-time job, because this was the time that everybody around me was like, Hannah, you need to quit. You need to do this. Like, you're young. This is the time to do it. Like, you can't waste any time. And like, I was the one that wanted to stay in my job. And so I gave the TED Talk and then literally walked in on Monday and left my full-time job. Like, I gave a 6 weeks notice because I wanted to be just really mindful and like,
awesome.
I wanted to be careful. But I was taken on by this woman who I did freelance work for her. And she also was very much like, you know, like, I'm going to take you on. I'm going to pay you this. But like, I really want you to like build into this gift that you have. And I think that there is a book inside of you. And so I was working for her up until in November, the day, like to the day that the TED Talk came online. I got an email from her in the morning being like, hey, like we're shifting around the team. So like come January 1, like we won't need you anymore. Like we won't need this position anymore. But like, I think this is perfect timing for you to go and do the thing that you need to do, you know? So I'm literally sitting there at my desk being like, oh my gosh, like what am I going to do? Like this freelance position is going to end for me. Like I went out on a limb. I quit my job. I thought God was telling me to do this, you know? And I honestly didn't even have any time to panic because 2 hours later is when the TED Talk went up online. And like I was reached out to by movie companies wanting to buy my life rights. I was reached out to by 5 or 6 literary agents, like wanting to buy the book. I was starting to be reached out to by colleges, conferences that wanted to bring me to speak there. So it literally was like, I went from like, okay, my freelance position is ending to like, nope, this is perfect timing for like what God is going to do. And so it was, yeah, in the first 24 hours, one of the literary agents that reached out to me, that ended up becoming my current literary agent and the person that I've journeyed through this whole thing with. And she told me that that was the first TED Talk that she ever watched was mine. And she just was like, this girl has a book in her, like she's got plenty of books in her. And then she reached out and I spent the next few months like talking with literary agents, making sure that like I was going to sign with somebody that had the same heartbeat as me. And it ended up being her, the first literary agent to reach out to me was the literary agent that I signed with.
That is amazing. I am like so excited about that.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper and deeper in credit card debt and you're not sure how to fix the problem? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management is a nonprofit organization that will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment. Put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest rates by as much as 60%, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. It's not a loan. It's a smart way to relieve your stress, meet your obligations, and preserve your self-respect. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Gather up your bills and call this toll-free number for a free, no-obligation debt analysis. 1-800-741-8205. Again, that number, 1-800-741-8205. You don't want to miss this opportunity. Give us a call today.
Okay, so life has totally changed. You've put in your notice. You're stepping into this. At that point, what do you feel like God's doing? Like, do you feel like a pull in a direction, or what do you feel like? Is this that kind of moment where you're like, it's all coming together?
Yeah, it was some kind of moment. I mean, I think it's like one of those things where it's like, God, like, I don't know, like, you know, you kind of are like, did I hear you? Did I not hear you? Like, are you calling me to do this? Like, you know, for me, I am so much like I am my father's daughter. My dad is very practical, like very much like, okay, like you go to a job, you work this many hours, like you get paid to do this, you know? And so for me to like quit my stable job to go and do this, like follow this dream felt crazy to me. Like felt like, what am I doing? You know? And yeah, then it all started to come together. But honestly, like, I feel like just now, like 5 years into it, am I starting to settle into the like, okay, like maybe this is for the long haul. Like, you know, like this is what God is setting me up to do. And I have to be the one to embrace that and like be okay with that and like believe that. Because I think I always like can like entertain this fear in the back of my mind of like, okay, well, this is going to end soon, you know?
Right.
So
I'm just curious, what did you, and we'll tell people to go check out, we'll post a link to your TED Talk, but what was your talk about?
My talk was about the love letters. And so it was about those letters, but also about just like connection and presence in the digital age, which has always been like a big passion of mine. Even before, like when I was in college, I just remember social media like coming out. Facebook had been around, but like Twitter came into the forefront, I think, when I was like in my second year of college, and I was working at an internship for a PR firm. And so I just remember thinking like, man, like this social media thing, like this is going to be a big deal. But I always had this feeling like in the pit of me of like, this is also going to be something that's like going to cause like crazy disconnect among us. And I just felt it. And so I talked about that in the talk, and it's been something that has continued to be at the forefront of the things that I create and the things that I talk about now, because now we're actually just starting to get like the research that backs that social media is making us more disconnected and is making us sad and anxious and lonely. So yeah, I just always had it in the deep of me like before then.
That's interesting. I just think it's so sad. I read a article, or I read something the other day, that basically said along the lines is because of social media and the things that what you're talking about, that one of the best things we can always pursue is communication and improving our speaking. Because where robots and different things will be able to replace us, those nothing will ever replace that one-on-one connectiveness and being able to communicate.
Totally. I completely 100% agree.
Okay. So let me ask you, what do you feel like your biggest strength is?
So I would say that my biggest strength, I don't know. I think that I guess it would be a cop out to be like, oh, I think that my biggest strength is writing, even though I think that like writing is like,
no, it's a gift though.
Yeah. I think communication in general is my greatest strength. Like I think I'm a good communicator, and I'm good at getting like, I'm good at getting a point across in like a creative manner. And so like, it's like my communication infused with creativity.
I like it. What would you say your biggest weakness is, possibly an overextension of your strength or something totally different?
I think my biggest weakness is like, I don't know, like I can tend to be like really insecure, or I like feel like, oh, I don't know if people like me, you know, like, and it's self-deprecating. So like even tonight, like we have like a birthday party. It's my 30th birthday today.
It's your birthday today?
Yeah.
Yay. Happy birthday.
So we're celebrating, and I'm so nervous. I'm like, what if no one comes to the party? You know, like it's always in the back of my mind, and it's like, I have to be careful not to let that, like that fear be the thing that leads me or guides me.
Okay. I appreciate the honesty. I think a lot of people struggle with that. And it's just a matter of, like you said, just pushing through and just allowing the Lord to do whatever he's doing.
Totally. So. 100%.
Okay. So, I may or may not do this show in two parts just because we have gone long, but I feel like you just had so much value to give everybody. But I want to jump into your newest book is actually what I have in my hand right now. It says Come Matter Here. The newest thing, what inspired you and what is the book about?
Yeah, so the subtitle of the book is called Your Invitation to Be Here in a Getting There World. And so the book in itself is like, it's funny because like, you know, we spent this whole amount of time talking about all these crazy, awesome things that happened. And a lot of those things that I feel like God like really had in the cards all along. But what is crazy about my story is that even with all these beautiful things happening around me, I think I reached a point in my story where I lost myself. I became so consumed with the things that God had given me that I nearly forgot about God himself, you know, like those things were more valuable. And so it was in 2014 that I, you know, I packed up my life and I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. And I think that I did that partly because I felt like I was supposed to go to Atlanta. I felt like there was something there for me in Atlanta, but I also felt like, I just felt like it was the next impressive thing to do. It was the next thing that would like cause me to be like, just stay impressive in a lot of ways. And I don't mean that like I don't think like I felt that in like a prideful way of like, oh, I want to be really impressive to people. But like, you kind of, you don't even realize when you're intoxicated by that. You're intoxicated by like being the one that's always doing the really cool thing. And so I moved to Atlanta and like very quickly realized that like all of these things that I had taken for granted, like friendships, community, church, roots, all of those things, like they do not happen instantly and they do not happen overnight. Even if you have bouts of success that happen overnight, like the stuff of this lifetime that actually matters, like does not come in a matter of 24 hours. And, I was kind of going through a very severe depression in 2014 into 2015, where I really didn't know if I was coming out of it. I didn't know that I would ever be better, that I would ever be able to work again. A paralyzing, paralyzing depression that I had to rebuild what I called my new normal. And that was just realizing that like these things that you're chasing after and these things that you're striving for, like, they won't fill you, and you can get to the point where you're like on top of the mountain and it still doesn't, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't fill in the way that God fills and in the way that those things that like take time and take energy in order to fully plant yourself and root yourself in, like, matter. And so it was a reorientation of my heart to say, like, these things that I thought mattered so much don't matter, and these are the things that actually matter to me.
I'm just curious, at what point, because I agree with you, it's so, like, you can't rebuild, like, the value of friendship and community, church, and all those things. We always, it's kind of like the grass is greener somewhere else
type deal.
What kind of, did you have that moment, like, you moved, and then all of a sudden you just, like, became lonely, or stuff just hit you, and you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I went through the initial honeymoon phase of like, I'm in a new city and like everything is new and everybody's really friendly. And so I felt like at that point, though, that like I remember actually the specific moment of like the loneliness was kind of starting to close in. And the thing is, I didn't know, like, having gone through depression once in New York City, I really thought depression was like the chicken pox. I thought like you have it once and then you never deal with it again. So like when the depression was creeping back,
I don't know where you got that conclusion or who lied to you on that one. But that's a new one for me.
Well, but the thing is, like, no one talked to me about depression growing up. I had no idea that it ran in my family. We never gave it a name. Like, I look back on my childhood and I'm like, I was a really, really anxious child. And we just considered it to be normal. And like, so even when I got this diagnosis of depression when I lived in New York City, I'm like, I don't know what you do with this. You know, like, I didn't know anything about like the fact that depression could be something that comes up in the long term. Like, it could be something that keeps coming back. And so I just, like, I remember, though, that, like, being here in Atlanta and, like, the honeymoon had kind of worn off. And it was one of those moments or those valleys where you're like, okay, God, like, I thought that I was supposed to come here, but, like, maybe I didn't hear your voice. Maybe I just thought it was me speaking in a God voice, you know, like, those moments in our faith that I think all of us have of like, I don't really know what's going on. And like, I don't even know, like, if I'm in this. And so I remember sitting in my coffee shop, in my favorite coffee shop here in Atlanta. And I remember the owner coming up to me and he just said to me at one point, he was like, you know, like, I just wonder about you. And I was like, oh, like, really? Like, well, what do you wonder about? You know, like, and he just said, I just wonder who picks you up from the airport. That's all. And he like said it and then like walked away from me. And it felt like it was like this movie moment, you know,
dude, because that's like deep.
It was deep. It was so deep. And he has like played such a pivotal role in my life since then. And my birthday party is actually at that coffee shop. We are closing down the coffee shop to have a birthday party and a launch party. But I just remember I felt like he was the first person in all of this to just kind of peel back the layers and be like, I see you and I see what you're doing. And I'm realizing that like, you're not doing the work of planting down the roots. Like you're staying here long enough to impress people, pick up your suitcase and run somewhere else. And that was the moment that I just kind of was like, oh gosh, like, what am I doing here? Like, this isn't enough. And I was like emotional, like kind of like life crises of like, yeah, who does pick me up from the airport? And like, do I even ask them to pick me up from the airport? Or like, am I so self-sufficient and independent that I'm like, I don't need people and I don't need to let people in? And that moment was just really pivotal for me.
Wow. I'm really amazed at his question, because it's a really indirect way of asking something very blunt. But
yes, yes, right?
I mean, it really is. I'm really impressed with the question, though, because I was just thinking about that myself. You know, if somebody was to ask me that, I'd be like, well, I don't know. Obviously, my wife or, you know, one of my kids or but you didn't have that. So I'm thinking, going beyond that, you know, what friend do I ask? And then really the question becomes, well, like for me, it's, well, I always feel like I'm intruding on somebody. I'd hate to ask somebody to go out of their way to get me. And then when I think about it, I think, you know, but that's not relational. That's not building friendship. That's you're missing the point of life, that what God's given us is to connect with people.
Exactly. And I mean, like, I totally think he was 100% asking that, like a rhetorical question of like, yeah, I'm just going to drive a point home with you. But like, I mean, I just felt like God went to such great lengths multiple times to tell me, like, no, there is a purpose for you being here in Atlanta, but it's just, it's not what you thought it was going to be. And that's most often what we think when we go somewhere new, when it's a new adventure, we're like, it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. And then God is just like, I didn't bring you here to meet your expectations. Like, I brought you here for your transformation. And those two things are very different, you know? And so it was him. And I remember at one point flying back to Connecticut and, meeting with my spiritual mentor and asking her, like, can I come home yet? Like, am I done? Like, can I be done now? Like, 6 months in, like, I moved in a new city. And I think that the part of me that's like the romantic and like the writer was like, this is going to be very similar to the journey that my mother had. I mean, my mother broke off an engagement, moved to New Mexico and lived there for several years before coming home and like meeting my father. And I just thought, I'm going to make that trip really expedited and quick, go out, see the world, come back, you know? And my mentor just like, I remember her saying to me like, no, like you can't come home now. Like you're in the valley. And she said specifically, you're in the valley. And she said, you've had a lot of high highs and a lot of low lows, and God wants you to learn how to walk in everyday life. And I hated that answer. I did not want that answer. Who wants to learn how to walk in everyday life?
Right. But I love what, okay, so obviously you stayed, correct?
I did. I tried to leave and I stayed though. So, I mean, there was a time throughout that depression that I was ping ponging back and forth. I was in Connecticut. I was in Atlanta. I was in Connecticut. I was in Atlanta. And I remember we were so close to just literally like packing up a U-Haul truck, like, and driving me back to Connecticut so that I could recover, like surrounded by people that really knew me. And I was kind of on the up. I was taking medication at that point. Like, I was getting stronger. And I remember walking through the airport, like on the way back from a speaking engagement, because I honored every speaking engagement that I had during this depression, which was probably the hardest challenge of my life, like to like have people like getting me to the airport and like getting me on the plane and like staying with me on the phone in the hotel rooms. Like, I'd go speak and then I would come right home. But I did every speaking engagement during that time. And I remember walking through the airport. See, airports seemed to be a theme in my life. And I just like said to myself, like, I just want to go back to normal. Like, I really just want to go back to normal. And I just heard God like audibly say, but like, you weren't happy then. Like, that didn't make you happy. And that was the moment that I realized, like, yeah, if I choose to leave Atlanta right now, I will be running from everything that God was planning for me. Like, I'm running too soon. Like, the story isn't finished yet. And so I made that decision that I was going to stay and I was going to recover in Atlanta. And the only option that I had was to plant roots down and to make friends and to be honest with people and just like pursue health and friendship and relationships and faith above anything else that I thought it was important to pursue.
You know, my biggest takeaway from that, obviously you dropped a ton, but having a mentor or somebody in your life that's, you know, that's been through stuff or that's older, and then submitting to that authority.
Yes, 100%.
Because had you not submitted, think about, you know, you wouldn't be where you're at today, and you wouldn't even written this book, possibly, had you not submitted to your mentor to say, no, you need to stay because you need to go through this, because the book is kind of the outcome of some of your darkest moments coming through that. But had you, but had you left the process early, you might kind of like the Israelites, you might be still going around that mountain again.
So, so true. I mean, and I think that's what's so interesting is like the world, like the time that we're living in right now, like no one wants to submit to any kind of authority, you know? And it's like so much easier to be like, well, I think this is the right way. And so I'm going to charge in that direction. And I'm just so thankful that like I was able to look at the people that were in my life and say, okay, these people have been around the block a few times. Like they know better than I do. And I'm just going to do what they tell me to do. And I'm thankful that I wasn't too prideful in order to like reject that in any way, because like, I honestly don't know that I would be, I wouldn't have come out of the woods. I would still probably be there in the wilderness going around and around and around. And, it's just something to be said about people that are having those people in their life that are wise counsel, that have been there before, that are praying on your behalf, that are walking with you through it. And so that really humbled me. And I'm thankful that I was able to be like, okay, I'm saying yes to what they're telling me to do. And the thing is, like, the stuff that they were telling me, like, it was not sugarcoated in any way. It was not to stroke my ego. Like, it was basically, this is what you need to know, and this is what you need to do. And it just was like kind of, it was at moments like either you're going to listen or you're not going to listen, but like, this is the way out.
Wise words. Okay. So I'm going to jump over real quick to chapter 16. I'm going to read something for my listeners real quick. If that's all right with you. And awesome. Then I want to dive into it. Okay, so it says, ask all your questions. It says, the best lesson I ever learned about faith came from a 7-year-old atheist named Joe, whom I met at Starbucks one morning right before I moved to Atlanta, before any of this story really even existed. He approached my table and while I was working one morning, stretched out his hand and said, Joe? He pulled the headphones from his ears. Hannah, I answered back, taking his hand. Hannah, he repeated my name back to me. What is it you love? What is it that I love? I had to repeat this question to make sure I had heard him right. It's sad that we don't really ask that question often. We ask questions like, what do you do? And we assign worth to a person based on their answer. Man, that hit me pretty big. I read that and I thought, you know, how many times do we look at people and we base their worth off of what they've accomplished or what they've done? But not necessarily, this is a heart question, you know, what do you love or what are you passionate about? So why don't you talk about that moment?
Yeah, that was, I mean, that moment has obviously stuck with me and been really pivotal for me. And I love Joe. He's fantastic. We still hang out on Facebook. But I just, yeah, like, I don't know, like one of those things where I've just, no one asks that question. It's as simple as that, you know, like people always want to know what you do. And I think I've become keenly aware that like sometimes asking that question, like, what do you do? Like, that's like the last question in the world that people want to be asked. And it like doesn't define them in any way. And it really isn't even the thing that like they wouldn't say that that is like a good demonstration of who they are. And so I've just like learned to ask that of people because I even like, I don't know, when I ask the question, what do you do? Like, I don't even like to, I don't know, like, I don't like asking it. I kind of cringe when I ask that question as like a default question, you know? And so asking that question of like, what do you love? Like, it felt like somebody was just like, they were seeing me and they wanted to know what I was about. And I didn't like, I wasn't even equipped to answer that question. I like wasn't prepared for it at all. And so it's a really good way to like unlock people and like figure out what they're about, you know, what matters most to them.
It's a good question. I'm going to start using it because I'm really curious what kind of answers that you get. And you know, the other question I thought that I would love to ask people is, what are you passionate about?
Yes, totally. Because if you immediately just ask, like, what do you do? And the person really isn't passionate about it, like, really doesn't even care about the job they do, like, it deflates the conversation.
Yeah, because you're hitting a sore spot or a pain point because they might be in the middle of something that they, like you said, they absolutely hate. And then you just probe something like a wound or a sore.
Totally, totally.
So as we start to wrap up the show, I want to ask you this. If you were to go back to the younger you, you're going to give yourself any advice. You can't change anything that you're going to go through, but you're going to go give yourself a pep talk. What advice would you give the younger you, and what age?
So I think that I would probably, I would just tell myself to calm down, you know? I take things so seriously still to this day. I'm learning to just kind of soak up more joy and be like, just be more in the moment. But like, I think like, whereas I spent all of this time worrying about like, will this work out or will that work out? Or can I do this or can I not do this? Like all of that stuff, you look back and you're like, it doesn't matter. Like it didn't matter. And so I think it's like just reminding myself to like, calm down, be in the moment, enjoy yourself, like find the joy and like make the like, dedicate yourself to that.
So you go back to probably like teenage years or maybe a little before that?
All of it, every bit of it. I'm so
earliest anxious. Memory I'm going back to.
Earliest memory. I mean, like, this is like my neighbors, like we all like what we called it queasy. So like they would just be like, oh, Hannah's queasy, you know? And that was like my way of saying like I'm really anxious, but I was anxious about everything, like everything. And so I don't like, I would say of all the things that's been the hardest for me to attain in my life, it's been joy. Joy doesn't come naturally or easily to me like it does for some other people. I have to work extra hard to be in the moment or to feel joy over things. And so I think, yeah, like I would probably go back and just tell myself teen years, childhood years, like all throughout building and cultivating this business of like, just like, calm down and enjoy yourself and like soak up the moment and like just be in the moment, you know, like don't be 5 years in the future. Don't be 5 years in the past. Just like be here now.
So I got a challenge for you, Hannah. This is going to be good. Okay. And I would love, I would like some feedback in the future, maybe even 30 days on this. Okay.
Okay.
I'd be really curious. So if you have the gift of prophetic and just, you know, you're able to hear God's voice, what he's saying in your life. My challenge to you would be is to start the journal process of asking the Lord, what does joy look like for me today?
Okay. Yes, I'm going to write this down.
And just see, I would love to hear your journey over the next 30 days, like every day, because it's going to be different. Maybe he has something different, a relationship, a friendship, something with your husband, a coworker, just anything. But what that joy looks like specifically for you today. And how to walk that out and to be purposeful on joy for the day.
I love that. You're right. I know. And that's why I was like saying it's like the water faucet. It's like I can turn it on if I want to, but sometimes you're just a little bit like nervous to sit there because you don't know what's going to come out.
That's funny you said that, man. I got so many journals of stuff where I've just spent literally a half hour or an hour just journaling, not even knowing what I'm writing. I'm just writing as fast as I can write because I'm hearing stuff. And then I go back and read it and I'm like, this is really good. And then I laugh about it, but I'm like, but I didn't write it because I just was writing what I felt like the Lord was saying because I'm thinking, I don't write this good.
No, but this is the thing that was happening to me in college when I wasn't a believer. And like, what I was like, I couldn't explain it to anybody. I'm like, there's just this thing that happens. I start writing and then all of a sudden I'm not writing anymore. Like, it's not me anymore. And like, I read some of this stuff back to my mom, and my mom, who is a believer, but didn't really know much about the prophetic, was just like, what is this? Like, this is kind of weird. Like, it was one of those things where it's like, I didn't know until I knew. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, it's just, I need to cultivate it more. I need to not be afraid of it. I don't know why, like, there's like this fear that comes when I go to sit down to do it. Like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. I'll get you plugged in with a group. And, my wife, we do stuff together. We've done group act things with our kids. There's a lot of things. And again, check out Sean's stuff and different things, but I'll get you connected in a cool group of people and, you'll enjoy it. Cause it really, helps you. It's like writing. It's a process and you get better at it and it's fun. So
yeah, it's really fun when you've got like a word for somebody else. You're like, this is so cool. Like that was so specific, you know,
it is, it's powerful. Okay. So, you just gave yourself advice, the younger you. As we wrap up the show, what advice would you give my audience?
Gosh, that's a good one. So I think that, like, you know, going off of the vein of like asking that question, like, you know, what is it that you love? Like, what do you